from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Youth sports is now tipping into a big business. Elite, expensive, exhausting. Where once kids strapped on their shin guards and hit the local turf, now they jump into SUVs and jet planes and travel around the country to compete with their private club teams. Recreational town leagues punted to the side, varsity letter jackets left unclaimed. In their place, a maybe $15 billion industry catering to the dreams of college scholarships, to the pride of membership. This hour On Point, the commercialization of youth sports. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Parents, are you stuck in the travel sports grind? Do you love it? Resent it? Are you priced out of it altogether? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. With us now from New York, Sean Gregory, senior writer at Time Magazine covering sports, wrote the recent Time cover story headlined How Kids Sports Became a $15 Billion Industry. You can link to that at our website, onpointradio.org. Sean, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks a lot for having me.
And with us from Aspen, Colorado is John Frankel, correspondent for HBO's Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel. He reported the Youth Sports Inc. segment for Real Sports, aired on August 22nd, got a lot of attention. John Frankel, thanks very much for being here.
All right, Tom. Thanks for having me.
John, first to you. What's going on? I mean, the old classic black and white movie era is Little League, then high school sports, then a couple guys go off and play in college, and maybe somebody once in a rare blue moon becomes pro. This has now changed a lot. Describe the change.
I think the change is you used to say, Mom, Dad, I want to sign up for the local Little League, and you go out for maybe a practice in your backyard on a Tuesday afternoon, and you might play a game on a Friday or a Saturday. I'm going to take a real leap here. And I'm going to say that, in a way, this is sort of the steroid of this generation, or this decade even.
Okay, you know, be careful, though. You're talking about pretty soon you got kids on steroids. So
and that's why I say it, because mm-hmm. 10 years ago when steroids were sort of the choice of athletes, you know, and you heard about a lot of high school athletes doing steroids, All of a sudden John Jr. was saying, well, I'm not going to make my local high school team if I don't get on steroids. All right? We addressed that issue. Yep. Now what's happening is the family saying, this is the keeping up with the Joneses. If I don't go play travel sports, if I don't get out of rec league, if I don't get out of my local little league, if I don't stop playing high school sports and go play for the club team in lacrosse, volleyball, field hockey, soccer, baseball, if I don't go do that, I get left behind. Because those other things have stopped being relevant. And that's what I mean. I'm not suggesting the dangers of steroids to playing travel sports. I just mean this is this generation's version of keeping up.
Sean Gregory, describe for us, if you would, how this works. I mean, for families who are not in the midst of this, if they're in the midst of, in the thick of it, they know all about it. But for families or people who are not, and we still have the old model in mind, and it's old now, just, you know, sort of marching through school sports and Little League. What are the club teams? How do they work? How do you get into them? How many kids get in there? And how's the whole system work?
Well, there's some variation with different sports and in different places. But the bottom line is if you're not in it and you don't know what to expect, here's what you should expect. A lot of time layout. I mean, practices, constant practices, weekends, every weekend in season, you're going to be at tournaments, at games, some tournaments around the country. It's all day, both days on a weekend. You're going to be standing on a sideline or inside a sweaty gym. You're probably going to have to, if it's a good team, you're going to have to pay for travel. So start budgeting for hotels and gas. And
we're not talking just travel just around the corner here.
No. Travel to different states, even national tournaments, depending on the level of the competition. And this is at 8, 9, 10 years old. I mean, you know, there are rankings, power rankings, baseball power rankings for 9 and 10 year olds. They start as young as 4 and 5 year olds. Some of these rankings, it's kind of crazy. And so it's a very, you know, as a parent, you're gonna have a lot of choice, right? You're gonna have everything's in front of you now. You know about this team and that team, and you know there's this app called CoachUp where you can basically order a private coach just like you order an Uber, you know? So it's very easy to do, and people are going to do it.
And what portion of kids who are involved in sports are going on this elite track, as it's called? And I don't know what to think of that word exactly, but let's just use it for the moment. I mean, is this 5%, 2%, 1%, 10%?
The estimates are all over the place. And one thing about the term elite, and you bring up a good point, it's not always elite. A lot of these travel teams, there's entrepreneurs that start them, and they're going to take your check. If you want to cut a check, your kid will make the team. So there are, yes, there are elite teams where you really have to try out and make it. But there are some organizations where you'll have like an A team, B team, and a C team. And so it's not really elite competition, some of these teams. But again, it's hard to cut a kid who's going to cut you a $500 check for the season. You know, one, as far as numbers, you know, just look at Little League. Little League participation is down 20% since the peak in about the late 90s, early 2000s. And I think that says a lot. I think one, cutting into your neighborhood traditional Americana Little League are these club travel teams. So there's been a shift of players from Little League to travel, no doubt.
Here's a clip from John Frankel's HBO Real Sports report, Youth Sports Inc., they call it, where they're talking with the Coe family. Parents Brian and Angie admit that travel sports for their twins, son and daughter, have just taken over their lives.
It's so competitive. And if you don't keep up with what everyone else is doing, your kid's going to fall behind.
How big a part of your life has this turned out to be?
50%. Yes, 50%.
I was going to say a little more.
I was going to say, or maybe more. Yes.
You spend half your time thinking about travel sports, packing your kids up for travel sports, preparing for travel sports.
Yes. You don't know until you're in it, right? And now we're knee deep in it. And you say, holy cow.
Holy cow, knee deep in club sports, travel sports. Hey, never mind the old model of just go off and play at the junior high or high school. John Frankel did that report for HBO. He's with us. Sean Gregory is with us from Time Magazine. It's their cover story, how kids sports became a $15 billion industry. James is calling from Salem, Massachusetts. James, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hello. It's great to be here. First time I've been on.
Great to have you. What do you know about this whole world, James?
Well, I've been a USA hockey coach for about 10 years. My son is currently involved, and I'm going to the post office right now to get him a passport renewal. He's playing in the junior AAA Tier 1 part of hockey, and the reason is because he can't really get on the high school team with any kind of he'd be sitting the bench, let's put it that way.
Okay.
And he loves playing hockey. He's been doing it since 3, and I haven't really kept up with the Joneses so much as I've just said, hey, how do I get this to happen? But I can tell you I've spent well over $50,000 on ice hockey. And I've also dreamed about making ice hockey more available to kids, but it's just so expensive.
Can we back up for a second, James? Did you say he just got his passport renewed? Does that mean he's traveling outside the country even for this?
Yeah, we've been to Europe on a camp. It was a lot of fun, and he goes to Canada on exchanges with Marblehead. It's plug for Marblehead. It's the oldest exchange in the country for ice hockey.
So you're talking global travel. And how old's your son?
15.
And in your case, this is not about necessarily going to the Olympics or winning a college scholarship, or is it?
No, not at all. I don't really care. He wants to be a Marine. I want him to go to community college and have fun.
Wow.
This is just another way to meet a lot of people.
Okay. And there's a story. There's one way in $50,000, passport at the ready, and son doing it, dad, a coach himself. Sean Gregory, what do you make of this story? This is not about getting a scholarship necessarily, a full ride to college. This is about being in the game and not minding spending and traveling to do it.
You hear that, and that's a pretty good perspective. You know, there's a stereotype that if every parent doing this is chasing the scholarship and is insane and nuts, right? But it is more nuanced than that. In my reporting, we did talk to parents who said, you know what, we're doing this because I didn't have, we didn't have this when we were young, right? We didn't have this opportunity to, quote, play at a professional type level, to play at Disney World at this huge facility where a lot of these youth tournaments happen, to play in front of a crowd, to play against kids from all over the country. So it has that big time feel. And some parents say, you know what? My kid loves baseball, basketball, soccer. I'm going to let him or her play so that they can experience that. And then if they might not make their high school team, their college team, their pro team, so at least they got that at some point in their lives. It's hard to judge that, I think.
Hey, John, whatever happened to the, you know, varsity sports in high school being the big time feel? I mean, when I played under the lights, felt pretty darn good on Friday night. I didn't feel the need to be in Disney World doing that. Is that just not good enough anymore?
Not good enough anymore. And you see it, and that's what part of our story was about. I mean, Sean can attest from his reporting that, yes, there are lots of families that are doing this. And there are also – I think we want to address the fact that there are also a number of families that are being left behind because of the expense of doing this. But what seems to be happening is high school sports isn't good enough, and your local field isn't even good enough. And so when we looked at this story, we said, okay, we don't want to do just the crazy parents. We want to say – we want to look at this industry, and that's what it's become. It is this industry now that towns, both municipalities and private enterprises, are taking advantage of. You might even want to go so far as to say exploiting this opportunity that exists out there. And so we went to a place like Westfield, Indiana, that has built itself a mega complex for families all over the country to travel to. And these fields are pristine. They are elite college-level and professional-level facilities.
This podcast and the following message are sponsored by Blue Apron, knowing that incredible ingredients make incredible meals. They follow the highest quality standards and deliver recipes along with just the right amount of ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. New recipes are created each week, so you can customize your recipes each week. Check out this week's menu and get three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/onpoint. You don't have to spend time at the grocery store. Make great meals in under 40 minutes. There's no commitment, so pick what you want at blueapron.com/OP.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about how private club teams have pushed into American youth sports, turning young kids sort of pro, costing parents a lot of money, travel teams, and cutting into the fabric of community-based sports. You can join us in this hour. Are you deep in this world? Have you lived it? Are you living it right now? Club teams taking over town sports, taking over kids' lives, family lives. Is it a good thing? Bad? Good for kids? Good for towns? And who or what is driving this? Is it parents, kids, club leagues, travel leagues, out for a buck, the desire to get a scholarship for college? Sean Gregory is with us, senior writer covering sports for Time Magazine, and a big cover story on this in this month. John Frankel is with us, correspondent for HBO's Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel. Here's a little bit from a segment he did called Youth Sports Inc. He talked with Brian and Angie Coey. He asked if they thought spending about $15,000 a year, over $150,000 they've spent over 10 years on their son and daughter's travel sports. Their twin children are like 13 now. He asked if he thought that was a wise investment.
You think you're going to see $150,000 in return on college scholarships?
Yes. Yes.
We
yes.
hope.
Yeah, yes.
There's belief. Brian and Angie Coe on the investment in their kids. We're going to talk to Angie Coe in just a moment. We've got a lot of callers on this, though. Kathy in Sarasota, Florida, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I agree with the Coes because my daughter was a swimmer here in Sarasota with the Sharks, and it's a wonderful team. No public school would spend that much time and money and get those kids in at 5 in the morning or anything like that, you know? It was not possible. So now she is swimming for the midshipmen. She wants to be a doctor. They're going to pick up everything.
Midshipman, you mean she's at the Naval Academy?
Yes, she is. She made it. She's a very brilliant child also.
And she did it on the strength of her swimming, you're saying, full ride?
Yes, yes. She's fantastic. She ended up in the top 10 at the Y Nationals in Greenville, North Carolina, which you were talking about. We had to sacrifice. Some of her teammates are millionaires. We were not. But we sacrificed, and we did it, and it's worth it. If you love your children, if everybody did this, this whole country would be better. you know.
I mean, but not everybody can get a full ride to college. I mean, I'm reading here in Sean's reporting.
Oh, I know.
2%. 2% go on. Yeah.
I was going to say, I think that is the exception, and everyone who goes to the Naval Academy gets a scholarship. Now, your daughter may have gotten it on the merits not only of her swimming, but obviously her academic prowess as well. But I think that if you looked around the country and you went to swimming coaches at the major Division I programs, you know, the Texas, the Floridas, the Stanfords, those schools, only a fraction of their kids are even getting scholarships, and they're getting partial scholarships. So unless you're playing a revenue sport such as women's basketball, men's mm-hmm. basketball, mm-hmm. or men's football, there aren't enough scholarships to go around. And in the case of the Coes, as we discussed, and I like Brian and Angie very much, but $150,000 with their kids playing baseball and track, even if they are fortunate enough to receive scholarships, I don't know that those scholarships will cover the $150,000 investment. In fact, I doubt it.
Let's ask Angie Coe. Kathy, I appreciate your call, and we wish your daughter the best, and good luck with her swimming and all the rest. Angie Coe joins us now. She and her family were featured in John Frankel's HBO reporting for Real Sports this month. She's the mother of 13-year-old twins, Eli and Jasmine. Family estimates they've spent more than 50% of their time on travel sports, maybe $15,000 a year, maybe $150,000 at age 13 in total. Angie Coe joins us from Bristow, Virginia. Angie, thanks very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. Happy to be with you guys.
So describe the kind of schedule that you keep with your son and daughter. Where they play, how much, what's it like?
It's very hectic. If you don't, you have to plan. Once you get the schedule, that dictates where you go or what you do for the next several months. And there cannot be any deviations. Like, we don't have a life. I am with my son. My husband is with my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, until John pointed out the cost, it never really dawned on me the amount, right?
Yeah,
investing. Yes, because we just do it. Because not necessarily keeping up with the Joneses, but it is the way it is. If you don't, specifically for my son in baseball, if he doesn't play travel sports or travel baseball, he doesn't make just the high school team. So put aside scholarships, which, you know, everyone wants that in the future. But we're simply talking about making the high school team.
And Tom and Angie, if I can jump in here for a moment, and I think there's two issues with that in terms of making the high school team. One, it's simply in terms of repetitive, you know, the skill of doing it time and again, time and again. So you're getting in your repetitions by playing on a travel team or a club team. And so that's necessary just from a skill standpoint. But then there's another issue, and that's the conflict now that exists between the high school coach and the club team. Because in a lot of instances, the high school coach is either running his own club team, his or her own club team, or they're working for an organization. And now there's that issue of sort of pay to play. If you don't play for my club team, you may not make
John's absolutely right.
Oh, that's crazy.
Right.
You mean it's sort of like almost blackmail, like pay and get on the club team or you won't make the high school team either?
That's right. So and Angie, you can speak to this, but you may find, let's say you even find a preferable travel team that has a schedule that you like that maybe is a little bit less expensive for you to join, but your high school coach is affiliated with another program or another team. You're going to be at a loss if you don't play for his team.
Hey, Sean Gregory, that sounds almost like corruption. Maybe that's too strong a word, but maybe it's not, Sean.
I mean, there's no law against it, but yeah, it seems unethical, and there's all kinds of conflicts in this whole thing. And you mentioned pay to play. There's one stat out there that 40% families who make $100,000 or more, 40% of their kids play, you know, travel sports or, you know, intense little. Okay. They play regular youth sports, team sports. That number's down to 19% if it's $25,000 or less. So
Wow. Depending
on your income scale can cut participation by half. I think that says a lot about the pay-to-play issue. And talking about cost, and it's interesting to hear Angie say that, you know, She didn't think about the money till John mentioned it. And I can't tell how many parents said to me when I asked them, you know, how much do you spend? They said, I don't want to know. They haven't calculated it because if they calculated it, they might not do it anymore.
You know, it's kind of a bummer if that high percent among the relatively affluent and then such a low percent among those without means, because historically sports have been kind of the great equalizer. You didn't have to be rich to be a great athlete. But here, if you've got to, does that bug you, Angie?
Yes, absolutely. Because it, you know, when I grew up and you mm-hmm. could just simply be good enough to make the team and there were no outside anything, right? I go try out for the team, I make
yeah.
it, and we're done.
And you might be great.
Exactly. And so, definitely playing travel sports and club sports has definitely helped my children. They've gotten better training that they would not get in just going to school and trying
okay.
out for the
yep.
sports.
Yep.
However, I can certainly say if they weren't doing the travel sports, I just don't think that they would. It's so competitive, and I'm not kidding you. You have to think that there are three middle schools that feed into a high school usually, maybe mm-hmm. more. So now you've got all these, in our organization, there are six teams for 13U, let's say 12 kids on each team. Well, all those kids aren't going to make the one high school team.
Right.
But that speaks to, Tom, that speaks
yes.
to Sean's point earlier about when you use the word elite or allegedly elite,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
right? Angie, say again, if you will, how many 13U teams are there in the organization that Eli plays with?
Six.
So I guarantee you there are not six teams worth of 13Us in that community that have Division I or Major League Baseball playing potential.
Absolutely
right?
not.
Yeah. That is a case of people who are taking this on scale. You know, this is the guy who opens up a restaurant, wants quality control and good service, and somebody comes in and says, you can make a whole lot more money if we start opening up and franchising your store.
And there's the business side of it. Angie, but you're committed. It's become a lifestyle for your family. What's the goal?
My husband and I are different on this.
Okay.
I want my kids love the sports that they're in.
Yeah.
They enjoy it. They are having a great time.
Baseball and track, yeah.
And we happen to think that they are pretty good at it. So for me, mm-hmm. I want them to have the opportunity to do better. And if it so happens that they get a scholarship out of it, fantastic. That's my husband's goal.
Your husband wants the scholarship.
Yep.
okay.
But I'm realistic.
Mm-hmm.
The percentage of that happening is unlikely. Like I said, my son has six. He's in a organization that has six teams for 13U.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter is on a club team. She happens to be the number one hurdler.
Mm-hmm.
So, maybe. And like John said earlier, the likelihood or the money that's available for scholarships in baseball and track
mm-hmm.
aren't as plentiful as it is in football or basketball.
Yep. Yep.
So I'm certainly realistic with that. Our eyes are open. But for the immediate, for my kids who will be in high school after the school year,
mm-hmm.
To make the team, they will have to stay in the sport in travel and club sports.
Angie Coe, you sound like a real committed mom. Lots of parents are going down this road. It's got all kinds of implications for families and kids and communities. But we can hear you right in the middle of it doing the best you know how for your kids. And I appreciate you joining us today. Thanks so much, Angie.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Sean, John, let me get more callers in here. Bill in Charlotte, North Carolina. Bill, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Listen, great, great topic. I've been coaching for over 25 years. And I'm telling you, listen to what John's saying. I see so much talent come through football, basketball, track, tennis. We see so much talent come through with the club teams. It's a great concept, and a lot of parents buy into it for the wrong reason. You think that your kid's going to get a scholarship. In reality, we have a lot of kids who are just better talented athletically than they are. And when you come out, we have to cut those kids. It's really sad, and all of a sudden you're accused of you're not a good coach. You don't know how to coach. And look, the kid's just better than your kid. Now, if you're like Angie, I think that was pretty realistic. She said that she knows it may not lead to a scholarship. I think that's a very genuine thought, because in reality, John's right. There are so few scholarships offered out there that just save your $150,000 and pay for your kid's education. It's much simpler that way.
But, Bill, what about, you know, families who say, well, if I really want to compete, get my kids to the top level, they've got to get on one of these private club teams, or else they're sort of missing the boat?
Yeah, I think that's more of a social experiment than anything. Mm-hmm. You're trying to keep up with the Joneses, and you're making yourself feel good because you're not depriving your kid of the ability to take part in these club teams. Spending $15,000 to $20,000 a year, I'm sorry, the average kid in the area where I live, they can't even come close to affording that.
I hear you.
Doing what your neighbors do.
Yeah, I hear you loud and clear, Bill, in Charlotte, North Carolina. It's great to have you on. Sean, is this about the kids or is it about the parents, the keeping up with the Joneses dynamic?
A lot of it's about the parents, you know, and some parents are genuine. Their kids love it and they do it for that reason. But yeah, there are obviously tons of parents out there living through their kids. And, you know, we haven't talked much about the industry that's driving it. You know, John's great HBO report talked about the towns building these palaces, these mega complex that feeds the demand for it. And the businesses, Jerry Jones, the owner of the Cowboys, is investing in a tech company that's buying up youth sports startups that do things like process payments and scheduling apps that help it make it easier to organize and schedule. There's one company that supplies NBA level statistics analytics for seventh grade basketball games.
You got $1 billion invested in this over the last year. That's pretty amazing. If that's right, that's really pushing the business side of it.
Yeah, and it feeds everything. Feeds everything else.
John?
Well, I think, you know, as Sean referenced in our story, and as I was beginning to say earlier, that this isn't just about what families are doing, but it's now the opportunity that exists for a place like Westfield, Indiana, to build itself. You know, they took 400 acres of farmland and that the town purchased, and they needed to create some more revenue for the town. And so they built 60 athletic fields. And now what they've done is they're not in the business of running sports teams or complexes. What they've done is they've let private enterprises come in and build basketball courts and ice rinks and so forth. And
it's a destination. It's a travel destination now.
Right. Who else is going to Westfield, Indiana, as the mayor would say? And, you know, they don't have an ocean.
Yep.
And so now all of a sudden they've brought all these people that, you know, one of their big selling points is that they are within a day's drive of 2/3 of the U.S. population. And sure enough, you walk through the parking lots that were built for 5,500 cars.
Wow.
And you see license plates from every corner of the United States. And with it, of course, has come hotels and restaurants and so forth. And it's what they call putting heads in the beds. Rocky Mount, North Carolina, where we also visited, this is a town that had essentially the downtown had dried up and disappeared long ago.
Yep.
And jobs had moved away and people had moved out of downtown. And they're now in the process of building themselves an enormous indoor athletic complex. They originally thought, oh, let's build a convention center and let's build, you know, an arena that might attract some other, you know, big time sports teams or even a minor league club. But no, somebody said to them, Dev Patik said, no, here's what you need to do. You need to build a facility that's going to attract sports, travel sports, and you're just off 95 and you're between New York and Miami. You're in a perfect spot. You've already got lots of baseball fields. Let's build an indoor facility that can have basketball and volleyball, and you'll attract that many more tournaments, and then you'll get hotels and restaurants.
Yeah, no,
and as a result,
it. Yeah. And they're doing, you know, big business. But let me ask you, what about all the towns that aren't major magnets for this now? I mean, at one time, this was a major part of local culture and life and fabric building in a community. Does that get gutted as so many people flow off to Indiana and North Carolina, wherever these centers are?
I don't know. Listen, high school football is still huge in Texas and still huge in Alabama. That is a community gathering. What I think is going to happen, not only has it, you know, torn away the fabric of your local little league, but what's also going to happen now is as more and more facilities are going to be built, they're going to cannibalize each other. And all of a sudden, you're not going to need to travel to Rocky Mount because you're going to have one of these facilities in your own backyard.
I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about how private club teams, travel sports teams for youth, have taken over, pushed in deeply into American youth sports, turning young kids into kind of pros, costing parents a lot of money, cutting into the fabric sometimes of community-based sports. John Frankel is with us from HBO's Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel. He's been reporting on all this. Sean Gregory as well for Time Magazine. Big cover story there. Both joining us. You can join us as well. Are you in this? And what's the bottom line impact of club sports? John Frankel for HBO talked with Andy Cook, mayor of small town Westfield, Indiana. You heard him mention. Westfield turned 400 acres of corn and soybean fields into a vast youth sports complex, 60 professional-grade fields. Cook said Westfield is cashing in big time.
Last year, we had just about 1.2 million visits to Grand Park, and our visitors spent $145 million in this area.
Grand Park, they called all those fields, and $145 million, that's a lot of money for a little town. Same show, John talked with Deep Patik. He's a consultant in youth sports business. He said while more and bigger youth sports facilities are being built, millions of kids are being priced out.
Sports participation rates in almost every major sport over the last 10 years have declined. So if you're a suburbanite whose kid is playing sport, you probably believe that more kids are playing sport, but it's not true.
Are children being left behind?
No question children are being left behind in sport, and they're being left behind because travel sports is dominating the landscape.
And there you've got it. Bob Bigelow, former NBA player, joins us in just a moment for a perspective on this. A couple calls first, if I may. Christy in Atlanta, Georgia. Christy, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was calling because this really struck a nerve with me, this topic today. It has caused much consternation and drama in my family.
Why?
I'm a single mom.
Okay.
Well, I'm a single mom. My son was a very talented soccer player, and he was invited to try out for many club teams. Unfortunately, I just didn't have the money or the time to do it because I had another child that was younger.
Yeah.
And I wasn't able to figure out how we can make this happen until he was around 15 years old. In the meantime, he did play for school. He played for his club, his high school soccer team all through high school.
Great.
But he resented like nobody's business the fact that I had deprived him of this opportunity because as a teenager, of course, he doesn't understand all of the financial aspects and the time aspects that go into making these kinds of things happen. Unfortunately, you know, it's still to this day, he's 18, almost 19 now. It's put a big hole in our relationship.
That's terrible.
I hope he'll get over it one day.
Yeah.
But I feel like you had a caller earlier, Kathy,
mm-hmm.
His daughter was a swimmer, and she said, you know, parents who love their children do this. And if everybody did this, then our country would be a better place. Sorry, but not all of us can do that. As much as we do, that doesn't mean I don't love my child any less.
Yep.
Or want to do and give him the most opportunities that I can. But I do think that they're aside from, you know, the fact that he did have some talent, enough talent to play on a 6A soccer team all through high school.
Good.
The fact is that he could have been even better had he played all year round. Certainly, and that is an opportunity that he didn't have.
Yeah, you know, I can hear the pain in your voice about it, Christy. I'm sure we all can, and I hate to hear that because, look, you just not everybody is in a situation to do it. But here's where the system has gone, and in your case, created kind of a rift in the family. That's really too bad. I mean, I hope your son continues to enjoy soccer, but let me take it to John and Sean for a second. And Christy, I really appreciate your call. Hang right in there. I mean, John, here it is. The system moves toward people who have money, and there's Christy and her son kind of at loggerheads about it, and it hurts.
It hurts, and I think that there are other issues that, you know, she's talking about this hole in the relationship that she has with her son. You know, Angie Coe, I almost wanted Angie to talk about it herself, but I can, you know, the pull that it has on families, you know, that she and her husband go in different directions each weekend, one with each child.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they had had a family reunion that had been designed and planned around their travel sports schedule. The family had said, when are you going to be around? And then even after all that, another opportunity popped up for the team to travel and they still had to miss the reunion, even though it had been scheduled around them. So people are missing family reunions, weddings, other events. There's another issue here, Tom, that we haven't talked about yet, and that is simply the specialization and the emphasis on playing a single sport.
Because you don't do three sports with this. You just go into one, and that's it.
That's right. It's unusual. We spoke to some families that I had spoken to over the phone that we'd interviewed, and they have in rare opportunities situations where their kids are playing both lacrosse and soccer on travel teams, and the conflicts exist there. Because the other thing that happens is that, you know, travel teams will say, we want a commitment that you're here, and so oftentimes that even trumps playing for the local high school. But it's unusual. And this is, again, about the coaches advancing their own agenda and their team's success, which is I want you here. I want you playing for my team, and you can only play my team, and that's going to help your development. Let me throw out a couple things that run counter to that. First of all, there was a study done by the University of Wisconsin, not the only one, but about the number of injuries. There are fewer injuries for kids that play multi-sports. Okay,
yep.
So that the overuse injuries that exist for kids that are playing a single sport.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The other thing is this, and Dev Patik pointed this out, and he referenced a study that was done. In this year's draft in the NFL, first round picks, 32 players were chosen in the first round. 30 of them were multi-sport high school athletes.
Wow.
Okay.
What does that say? All the specialization that's going on.
That's right. Parents need to wake up and look at the numbers, whether they're financial, the facts of the realities of whether your kid is going to get that scholarship, and even what it's going to mean for their opportunity to play a sport. Another study looked at last year's Super Bowl, Patriots versus the Falcons. 88% of the players on those two teams were multi-sport high school athletes.
But that's not what club teams do. Club teams drive you toward one sport in most cases.
But they're selling you a dream, and they're lying to you.
Wow!
the statistics support just the opposite.
Yeah, John, Sean, stand by. I want to bring Bob Bigelow in, former NBA player for the Boston Celtics, Kansas City Kings, San Diego Clippers, longtime advocate for reforming youth sports. He hosts clinics all over the country, helping improve how coaches coach kids. He's the author of Just Let the Kids Play, How to Stop Other Adults from Ruining Your Child's Fun and Success in Youth Sports, author of Youth Sports Still Failing Our Kids, How to Really Fix It. He's been listening. He knows this world very well, and he's gone right to the top in terms of sports. Bob Bigelow, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom.
So what do you think of this drive toward club teams, travel teams, way down starting age 5 and 6, 8, 9, 10, the whole dynamic of it, Bob? What do you see?
Well, I would tell John and Sean they're about 15 years late to the party.
You mean it's been going on? We know that, but it's just getting bigger and deeper.
Well, yeah. I mean, they've been nationally ranked basketball players since in fifth grade since probably 2001. You can tell I'm probably not all that happy with this. I'm
Why not?
Familiar with the concept. By the way, just mentioned about the NFL draft. It is the last sport. Which is the multi-sport athletic sport. You're not going to see football club teams like you do in basketball, soccer, and all these other sports.
The
game's too physical. The concussion thing is going to hurt that anyways. And it's well known most football players want those football players playing other sports just for pure athleticism.
Round them out all year. Yep.
So that's why you get those drafts. By the way, Tom Brady, I'm assuming everybody's heard of him.
Yeah, a little bit.
Local demigod here in Boston. Number 199 pick in the 2001 draft. Played his freshman ball at San Mateo, where he grew up in California. And they played on a winless team. I'll tell you, all this not playing club really hurt Tom Brady's career.
Yeah, too bad he never did make anything of it.
Yeah, what would have happened to that Brady?
What about the starting so young, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10? Does that give kids an advantage, Bob?
Biggest crock, biggest myth of all, which is driving this industry. Athletic ability prior to puberty is meaningless as an indicator of athletic ability past puberty. Meaningless. Biggest crock of all.
That's a lot of T-ball players out there crying in their milk now.
I hope they're getting their purple popsicle after the game.
So no point in driving the practice and the engagement with the sport before
there
puberty?
Are a couple of sports, female gymnastics, female diving, female, I'm missing one, I'm having a senior moment here.
Okay.
Everything else is after puberty. You're talking to someone who was a first-round draft choice in the NBA, never played basketball till I was 14. Boy, I'll tell you, not playing AAU at 10 really hurt my career.
So, yeah, NBA all the way. Keeping up with the Joneses is part of this. How big a part?
Oh, it's big. I mean, as I've said for years, when the media calls, I tell them one thing. What are you trying to do? I said, the biggest problem in youth sports is simple. Adult egos are getting in the way.
A lot of parents would say, come on.
It has to do with, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to drive adult ego out of youth sports. You can tell I've done a great job for 25, 30 years.
Yeah, keep at it. The parents might say, no, that's not it. We're trying to get a scholarship for our child.
Well, I think the numbers have been warmed over by John and Sean pretty well here. We all know the numbers. It's just a pipe dream for so many people. I mean, I respect the Coes. Good luck to them with their kids. But, you know, does anybody want to find out where that Seattle basketball player on the cover of New York Times magazine, what was that, 5 or 6 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Who was, by the way, flying around the country playing as a Hessian for Texas and New York squads?
Yeah.
Whatever happened to that kid?
Yeah.
Anybody know?
No, I don't think. I don't know. Sean? Glory?
No, not that specific kid. And, you know, we had a. You talk about the mercenary nature of this. One of the kids we profiled named Joey Arache, he's a travel baseball player. He's 10. He plays for teams based in California and Texas. You know, I was in Louisiana.
How tall and heavy is Joey?
No, he's small. He's not big. He's about
5 feet tall and he weighs 80 pounds. Great.
Right.
And he plays on a small diamond. Who the hell could ever predict that kid's going to be a baseball player, a great one, at 13, 16, 19, or 22?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's like I remember, Bob. I remember at one point my son was at a baseball facility and down in Florida because we were on vacation and we went over there and the coach was saying, you know, all this emphasis on kids learning how to throw a curveball at 12 or 14. He's like, give me a kid at 17 who's got a strong arm. I'll teach him how to pitch.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? Hasn't pitched for 6 years. I want a fresh arm.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, and the other thing, by the way, all this coaching and learn this skill, learn that skill. You go to any college coach in any sport, speed. Give them a good athlete. Right. Show them a kid it's fast.
Yeah.
And that's what they want.
Yeah.
By the way, Tom, you interviewed Edwin Moses at some point.
Yes, loved that. Loved that. Fantastic.
Right? Remember Edwin?
Yes, of course.
Okay, he is only one of the greatest athletes in any sport we've ever produced.
That's all. No less than that. No
5'7", 117.
Yeah.
As a sophomore in high school, Michael Jordan, 5'9", 155 pounds as a sophomore. These are 15-year-old kids.
Yeah.
Who would have ever known?
Nobody.
I hear both of them end up pretty well.
Yeah, they didn't do too badly. Let me take a call here from Omaha, Nebraska. Rod, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. My comments relate to the collateral damage of young people losing out on their innocence, lost experiences. My daughter was an elite level soccer player from about age 10 to 15, and she made varsity basketball and varsity soccer, but she quit her junior year because she was not having fun anymore, quit soccer altogether, just not having fun anymore. And I have one other quick example. I was a journalism teacher for 34 years.
Yes.
And one of my sports editors on my newspaper staff, his senior year, he played elite level basketball and baseball throughout probably since he was 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Senior year, he said, Mom, I'm going to go on this journalism trip to Anaheim, California with the newspaper staff and yearbook staff because I've never gotten a chance to do anything. Since he was age 10, he never got to go on a special vacation, a getaway. So I think there's, again, the burnout and the lost experiences is a real concern to me about what we're doing to our youth.
I appreciate your call, Rod. Bob Bigelow, what do you say to that? Burnout, loss of innocence,
The kid never made it to Westfield, Indiana. Poor kid.
Yeah. but do you see that actually happening? I mean,
It does happen. Yes. Whoever knows the statistics, it's not me. But if you think about it, someone once called it the 7-year itch, which has always been related to marriage.
Mm.
And but someone had done a study. You know, kid starts at 8 and by 15, burned out.
Yeah.
Well, if you think about it, you know, they're doing the same thing over and over for 7 years at a pretty young age. They don't know how to process all this stuff. And then they wake up one day and said, my gosh, my life is baseball. My life is hockey. My life is basketball. There's got to be something else out there. Maybe journalism. Hey, guys.
Hey.
There you go. You got one.
We can use the reinforcement. Sean Gregory, do you see any sign of this slowing down, turning around, or is it going the other way?
No, I mean, the horse has left. You know, there's some local leagues can try to revitalize, and there's some efforts to try to train coaches locally and kind of bring back the grassroots. But this industry is exploding. It's been growing. It's been forecast to grow. And just one quick note on the specialization. You know, you talked about, you know, the studies out there, no less than the American Academy of Pediatrics has pointed out and shown that, like, if you specialize early, you increase risk for not only physical injuries, but emotional injuries as well. There's lots of evidence of that.
You know, John.
And by the way, we talked about whether you're getting an elite experience by playing on one of these teams because the competition's better. Let's not dismiss the fact that just because you think you're playing travel sports doesn't mean you're getting better coaching either.
Yeah.
Amen. Yeah, I hear all that. I'm left, though, really thinking about the kids who just can't afford this world. Cutting them out of something that should be as simple as stepping onto the field, it just seems unfair, Bob Bigelow.
Well, I mean, they could step on a field, and I would disagree a bit, having heard the show. There are still community sports left out there. As many as much? No, because obviously it's a zero-sum game. The more kids who hit the travel or club means less kids that stay at home or, you know, play local travel leagues or something like that. But with that said, it's still out there. I mean, I would, the Coes and the baseball thing with the six teams at U13, that's 72 kids, but those kids all aren't bleeding into the same high school. I'm sure they're going to two or three different high schools. Plus, there's JV and freshman ball, too.
Still opportunities. Like go get them. Yep.
So there's some other things out there that add a few layers.
Don't feel banished if you're not in that field. Bob Bigelow was in the NBA with the Boston Celtics, Kansas City Kings, San Diego Clippers. Bob, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Sean Gregory at Time, John Frankel with HBO's Real Sports. You guys are terrific. Thanks for taking us through this world. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.